for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. I, of course, am Ms. Shannon, here with my regular co-host and podcasting life mate, Jayden Satiya, executive director of the Twin Cities Film Fest. Hello, Jayden. We have been talking more lately, so I don't feel as lost and in the weeds as I did last time we did the show, because it had been a while since I had a chance to see your lovely, smiling Twin Cities Film Fest face. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's just a, I don't know, I've just had an off week, just overall, just kind of like mentally got some blocks out, went to go work out, just in my own basement right now, still not going to the gym. But it was great to see you at our panel discussion that we launched. So of course, you bring the joy to my life. So the more I could see you, the more I could hear you, week gets better and better. So
thank you. The feeling is mutual. So thank you very much. I agree. Like last week was a little complex, but we had a great time at our first Empower Roundtable where we were talking about diverse storytelling. So that was fantastic. So if anybody's interested, we will make sure that we link to all of that on all of our Be Our Geek social media pages and all of those things out there. So it is nice to see you more often. I am glad that you are doing well. I see that you have not gotten a haircut since we saw each other. I thought that was top of mind.
No, and actually, I had a hat on, just took it off.
Okay.
I did a haircut, and I went to a professional this time.
Fancy.
And I think she did a pretty good job. It was just weird wearing a mask and then continuing to take the mask, the ear things off so she could get behind my ears. And it's just a interesting, but I could not go without a professional haircut any longer. So I did. I ended up going, and it was a good experience. It was safe and
wonderful.
I did. So look, it's short.
Oh yeah, it is short. You're right. It is. I thought you still had the fluffy bangs that you had from last time. So no, you're right.
And I didn't butcher my hair either. So I'm good.
That is going to be an excellent transition as we bring on our guest geek for this week. Just because we're talking about baseball caps, and if you are watching any of the promos for this, you will see that he has one on as well. So, Jayden, I am very happy to introduce to you and all of our Be Our Geek listeners, my friend, comedian, podcaster, and true crime geek, Dan Bublitz Jr. Hello, Mr. Bublitz Jr. How are you doing this episode?
I'm doing pretty good, except for all the talk about hair, because I don't have hair. I don't get to go to get my hair cut because it doesn't really grow.
Well, it's quite inconvenient, you've learned from Mr. Satiya sharing his story. So yeah. You're doing okay, Dan.
Your hair is built for COVID era, then.
Yes, it really is. All I have to do is shave my head. I cut it myself.
Well, you two are both the successfully relationshiped folks on this episode. So just so you know, Jayden did his own and he had an assist from his wife. So is that an option, Dan? Would you like to get your lovely lady friend to maybe assist you with the shaving of it? Or can you do it completely on your own?
I can do it completely on my own. I've been balding for a long time, so I've been shaving my head for a long time.
Right.
So it's just easier.
I'm pro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How often do you shave?
I probably do it like once a month, thereabouts. Okay. Yeah. Same with my beard. I usually do it once a month. I'll shave my head, trim my beard, do it all at once.
Well, you both are very, like, I am not a big facial hair person, but you both have the quality and the style of facial hair that I co-sign. So, not that you asked me, but but both of you have, you are very well groomed. Congratulations, gentlemen. Congratulations. So, if we ever need a grooming geek, I don't think we need to ask anybody else on. The two of you can do it, and it'll be great.
It's easy that way. I think he would agree as well.
Oh yeah, I couldn't imagine having a big wily beard, and I know my partner would not have it.
That's not her jam. Do not go Grizzly Adams in this house. Is that the rule? The unspoken rule?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It starts getting too wiry and wily. She's like, you need a trim.
At least she tells you.
That's the same with my son. So my son will come up to me and he goes like, you need to shave, you need to trim. He's 6 years old. He was like, you're very scraggly. I'm like, where did you learn that word?
How do you even know what that is?
Do they say scraggly on Daniel Tiger? Was he watching like something on PBS and they used the word scraggly and now it's part of his daily lexicon?
Either that or he probably heard my wife say it to him. They were like, your dad's looking a little scraggly today. And then he just came up and said, you look scraggly. I'm like, oh, my God.
You know you
It's probably planted, so she doesn't have to say it.
Right. She gets to be kind. Our kids get to be honest, absolutely honest. So that's good. Yeah, Dan, that is the thing, too. Like, like, Jayden and I both have kids. Dan virtually met my son, Jayden, just so you know, because Dan was kind enough to have me on his podcast, The Art of Bombing, which we'll talk about this episode as well. And my son was fully engaged with being disruptive the entire episode. So thank you very much for your patience, Dan.
Entertaining.
It was the most. This is what Miss Shannon's life looks like when other people aren't around. It's just her and her kid, as you can get. It was full on. This is mommy dommy time. And he was not having that. Mom had to do a podcast. Did not give two shakes. Didn't care. So Dan, before we get into when I ask you, as I ask all of our guests, what is it that you geek out about? We kind of, just to make it easy, go, what's the thing that you really love talking about that your partners and friends are sick of you talking about? And we kind of start with that. And so you brought up a couple of things. We're going to mostly focus on true crime today, but you also brought up the concept of social media, which I just thought was an interesting selection as well. So what about social media gets you all fired up?
Well, it's not necessarily social media. It's social media marketing. Mm-hmm. I'm actually about to graduate with an associate's degree in marketing. So I don't know. I'm just kind of a nerd about it. It's interesting to see like different trends, you know, with different platforms, you know, with social media, as far as what ends up trending, you know, like, for example, TikTok. I like kind of watching what works, what doesn't. Right. I do a lot of my own experiments, even like, you know, on Instagram, you know, trying different lengths of video and different hashtags and just things like that. So it's really, for me, it's just interesting to watch to see what works and what doesn't.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, you realize, well, it doesn't matter. It's all luck because algorithms control it all.
Then you're just a little bit heartbroken, just a wee bit. But you are very familiar with having that video content out there because you do have your Amazon Prime show that was out there. It was supposed to be a love story. So tell us about that.
All right. So that is a one-person show that I did a couple years ago now. The story is basically about a breakup that I went through when I lived out in California, and I also write poetry. And so what I did is I took some of my spoken word poetry and mixed it with my stand up into one complete show.
Oh.
So it kind of tells the story of the relationship from the beginning to the end of the relationship. And like I said, it combines poetry, stand-up, and storytelling.
I'm excited to see that. I haven't watched that yet. That was something that I learned that was new about my friend Dan when you sent that over in your bio.
So, is it a full-on production? Is it a one-man show with you just on a camera by yourself? Or, you know, did it actually take a crew of some sort and some editing? And obviously, you know, it's on Amazon Prime, so it's got to have meet certain, you know, production quality. Mm-hmm. And then the iteration of the idea to the finished product, how long did that take you?
Well, so the production, it was a semi-professional production, I would say. I didn't have a full crew. I had a friend who is in video production, and it was a multi-cam situation, but he didn't need operators. He just ran back and forth, you know, because it wasn't, you know, he didn't need somebody because there wasn't a lot of panning and moving around with it. All the cameras were stationary, so he just went back and forth between them. And then I had a professional audio recording and engineer that did, you know, he came in and recorded the audio. My other friend came in and did the video. My friend mixed the audio, then he sent it over to my other friend, who then did some editing, you know, between the shots and things like that. So that way it was a full, you know, high quality video product once it was done. And then as far as how long it took, I mean, it really took probably 3 or 4 years to complete fully. But a lot of that was because the writing took a long time. But I mean, it really took over 7 years because the relationship was like 4 years.
So at any point where you're like, I'm waiting for this to conclude so that I could turn this into a fantastic performance. This will be amazing.
All right. Well, the funny thing is, I never even had the idea to do a one-person show, or even, you know, about that relationship or what happened or anything. It was another comedian friend that suggested it, because in the end, it was a weird situation where we had a wedding, and then a couple days later, we broke up. We basically had a faux wedding is what goodness. It ended up being. Yeah, it's like a crazy thing or whatever. And I was talking to a comic friend. They were asking what happened, you know, and we were just kind of talking. And she was like, you know, you should turn that into a one-man show, because yeah. that is a crazy story.
Right.
And I was like, maybe. And I thought about it. I kicked the idea around a little bit. And I kind of did some writing. And at the time, during the breakup, I was writing a little more poetry. My comedy got a lot stronger because I got a lot more, you know, I was a lot more raw with it and honest about it and, you know, the feelings that I was feeling. And I kind of, you know, doodled here, doodled there. And then over the, you know, next couple of years, I kind of, it was a project that I would put, you know, I'd work on it a little bit and then kind of put it off to the side. Work on it, and then I realized it was already written. It was just not formulated into one situation, you know, because it was or in one script. You know, I had right. my stand-up over here, I had my poetry over here. It all revolved around what was going on. So I was like, oh, all I really needed to do is put this in a format and you know, a good story. You know, so it's from point A to point B, you know, to get there, to carry the story, whatever. And so I did that. And then I took it out on the road mm-hmm. as a live show and to work it out and do some more editing and things like that. And then I recorded it. I recorded it at the Goss Opera House in nice. Watertown, South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So,
yeah, it was a cool experience.
One of the other cool things that you've done that a lot of our comedy friends haven't done is that, you know, many of us have performed at festivals, but you've actually created festivals mm-hmm. for comedians. And so yep. tell us about that.
Well, that's another thing that I just kind of, I when I want to do something, I just do it, I guess. That's the thing. Like, I'm very indie mm-hmm. in the way of, like, you know, I like doing indie filmmaking. I like to do everything I can myself, you know, I'm a big do-it-yourself person. And that was a thing that when I lived in San Diego, there wasn't a comedy festival in San Diego, and it's a pretty big city.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of the bigger cities had comedy festivals. And even then there wasn't a lot of comedy festivals, not nearly as many as there is now.
Right.
Like, you know, even film festivals, there wasn't as many. And now it's like, they're everywhere, mm-hmm. you know, like that. They've all just kind of exploded. And I talked to my, you know, my business partner. I had a partner that I did a lot of producing with. We produced a lot of shows, and I was like, hey, what do you think about a festival? And so we kind of talked about doing it. And then we found out that one of the comedy clubs owned the website San Diego Comedy Festival, because okay. they were kind of kicking the idea of trying to get something going, but they always put it in the back burner.
Right.
Sure. So instead of competing with them, we just approached them and we're like, hey, we're thinking about doing a festival. We see you have this. You haven't did anything with this for like 3-4 years. What are you guys doing? They're like, well, we want to do something with it, but we don't ever have time. They're always concentrating on, you know, their big days, like, you know, their Valentine's Day, New Year's Eve, all these big shows where they make, you know, their money or whatever.
Right.
And they just kept putting that in the back burner. And so we're like, hey, why don't you let us run it for you and let us see what we can do? And so we just, you know, we took what little knowledge we had of producing live shows and applied it to a comedy festival. and it worked out pretty good. Because that one, I did that for 5 years. It's still going. I'm not part of that festival anymore. But, you know, they're going on like their 6th or 7th year now. Their 7th year for that festival. And then from there, I ended up creating another one when I moved back to the Midwest, which is the one that's near and dear to my heart. And that's Snow Jam Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. And that takes place in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Okay.
Well, you are a kindred spirit with our friend Jayton over there, because he is the one that was the primary instigator for the Twin Cities Film Fest. And now we are coming up on year 11.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, again, passion breeds innovation, right? So you just, you're passionate about something, you get the right people involved, and much like yourself, you just want to do something, you just want to start something, and hopefully it picks up speed, picks up fire, and it just kind of becomes its own little thing. And ideally, you can say, you can step back whenever you want and go, I created that, and it's in good hands, and it was valuable to the community overall. So it's no small feat starting a festival of any sort, but to have one run on a regular basis, consistently, professionally, right, continuing to grow, that's no small feat. And the one thing that I tell anybody who says, hey, you know, tell me a little bit more about the nonprofit, the film festival, I said, here's my first thing. Don't start one. Just go start a for-profit. Go start a for-profit that if you want to make money, do not start a nonprofit. If you are passionate but don't want to work your butt off, don't start one.
Yeah.
Passionate is one thing. Working hard is another thing on top of that. So, much appreciative of individuals like yourself who have the passion, who have the diligence, who have the forthright work ethic to make it happen. So kudos to you.
Thank you. I'd like to take all the credit, but I can't. It's a team effort, you know. With Snow Jam, I have a great team. There was some other comics that we helped co-create it and help make it what it is. And the nice thing about that, the work that I did with the San Diego Comedy Festival really fueled me to do this, because while I had a lot of, made a lot of the decisions and did a lot of the work for the San Diego Comedy Festival, at the end of the day, I didn't own it. I didn't have all the creative control. I was working, for other people. And so if they want, it was their way eventually,
Right.
It wasn't, there were certain things I couldn't do because it was out of my control. And when we started this other festival, well, even though I have other people help, I solely own the festival. So I have complete creative control. So I was able to do everything that I couldn't do with the other one and put it into this.
Well, that
Like one of the biggest things was I wanted it to be a fundraiser.
Right.
So that festival actually raises money for Special Olympics South Dakota. That's who we've been partnering with for the last 4 years. And I think we're going to continue. We're taking next year off because of COVID.
Right.
We don't feel right because we really rely heavily on the community support, with sponsorships and things like that, because we're trying to raise money for Special Olympics. We just don't feel right about asking for money when all businesses are kind of hurting, So we're going to take this next year off and then go from there. But so that was the other thing. And the other thing that I didn't like about doing the San Diego Comedy Festival is that it was a contest. And one thing I have noticed is that unless comedians came from the same city and they were already in the same circles, there wasn't a lot of camaraderie,
right?
Because they're competition. So they didn't want to hang out, they come do their competition and they're, just not quite wanting to be buddies or whatever. Where with this festival, the Snow Jam Festival, it's like camp.
Yeah.
It's not a contest. It's all about doing great shows for great audiences and raising money for a good cause, and everybody comes and has a good time, and they, we've had very few complaints from the comedians that have performed at our festival, and that's what really makes it worthwhile, when we can look at it and people are like, this is great.
Congratulations. So that is fantastic. And I, as someone who's been to both kinds, I agree with you. It is nice just to kind of go and go, I'm here to network and hang out and meet some new people, and I'm not worried about whether I came to win,
absolutely.
And that does make a big difference. I know some people are fueled by that. It's just not my jam.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we're fully upfront about it, too.
Right.
That's the other thing. There's a lot of festivals that'll kind of, they're very skeevy. They're just trying to make money. They don't really care about what the shows or this, or that. And they kind of don't tell you all the details, kind of keep you in the dark, whatever. And we're straight up, hey, this is what it is. We don't pay. This is a fundraiser. We'll try to get industry here to come watch. We don't guarantee industry is going to come and watch. It's out of our control. But what we are going to do is we're going to, we've often covered hotel rooms. So we're going to provide you with a hotel while you're at the festival, whether you're here for one day or the all 3 days. Doesn't matter. Even if you're not performing, if you come for the whole festival, we put you up for the whole weekend. And then we're going to try to give you the best shows with the best audiences we can. And so that's, you know, that's what we've been doing.
Well,
and I
bet,
Shannon, for you, that allows you, if you were invited to something like this, that allows you to work a little bit more on some of the things that you've been thinking about, because you have no pressure and you have the network there that can help you workshop a couple things as well. So if you want to try something, this would be a good platform to at least give it a shot.
I think the other thing that's good about it is a lot of what happens when you're in comedy is it's such an individual sport. Like those of us that do storytelling or who do improv or do or just actors in general, the community is built differently, but they you know, like, so for some reason, stand-up comedy is different and kind of based upon this Highlander mentality where if you're not getting a show, it's because somebody else, you know, instead of reminding everybody that there should just be more stage time for all of us and that we should be able to build a team and a network and all work together. That doesn't get fostered very often. And so having something like this where you go, look, hey, we're all different. We're all funny. You know, we all do what we do instead of it being, well, let's figure out a way to pick everybody apart. I think is actually really good for the scene to have more things that are like that where you go, no, let's, you know, figure out, you know, if we can meet somebody and if we all meet up in Sioux Falls, then it's, well, maybe I met somebody that's from Chicago or somebody that's from, you know, Montana or something. Now we all know each other and we can go, well, I'll come hang out with you. And then here's how you come hang out with me in my town. And that just doesn't happen very often. So it's great to have some more outlets for that.
Yeah. And that has absolutely happened at our festival. I mean, I know comics that are still friends that live all over the country. And, you know, an example, there's a comic from the East Coast. His name's Alan Richardson. He's did the festival a couple times now. A couple of Minneapolis comics were on, you know, they met him or whatever. He came through and did a tour a couple summers ago, and we all helped put on shows for him.
Oh, that's
you know,
cool.
He came, he was in the cities, he was back in Sioux Falls, all over, you know, wherever. And all these comics that he met at this festival kind of helped, you know, get shows and stuff for him.
That
help
is,
him fill some dates and stuff.
That is fantastic. So congratulations on that. And you let me know if there's anything we can do when you relaunch, once we can start doing it. Like, are you considering doing any of the, like, hybrid things? Like, maybe just some Zoom-ish type virtual shows during the days of when you would normally do the festival or any placeholder events?
We are thinking about doing some stuff virtually. I mean, honestly, if we wanted to do the festival, we could. There's no restrictions in South Dakota about anything regarding COVID like that. We could pack 100 people shoulder to shoulder if we wanted.
You know what I mean?
Like, that's how less they don't care about it over there. But like I said, we're a community. We need the community, and we just don't feel right about, you know, when all the community is kind of hurting. Because even though they haven't really shut down, some businesses did scale back on their own and things like that. And a lot of businesses were affected. But we have talked about doing maybe not the same weekend that we would normally do it, but we've thought about maybe doing some stuff throughout the year, you know, just to keep face so people are aware, hey, we're still here, we're not going anywhere. Plus we're going to probably try to get involved in other local events, you know, different things, you know, maybe try sponsoring some other stuff just to keep our face out there and stuff and be involved, and you know, that way the community knows we're still here.
Perfect. Well, if there's anything we can do to help you promote that, we're happy to do that. And so, you know what, Jayden, I was thinking about this when I asked Dan, okay, what things are you super into? We both dabble in true crime, but we've never done an episode on true crime. That's right. Here, I got you some music, Dan.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had. I think we've certainly had individuals who kind of expressed interest in it, but we've never actually done have a conversation, true in-depth conversation about why somebody is so infatuated with true crime shows or even podcasts, for that matters, right? Like the true crime podcasts that are out there. And what makes somebody so ingrained in true crime Because my wife would not watch anything true crime.
Right.
You know, I'll watch a movie because I'm more of a movie buff than I am episodics. So I'll watch. And again, the one show that on HBO, is it true crime? Is it what's the one Mahershala Ali was on?
Oh, True Detective.
True Detective.
True Detective. So it's not true crime, but it's detective based episodics, and they did it really well. So I got into that a little bit, but I've never really once watched like NCIS anything.
Really?
Ever. Yeah, no, I've never really gotten into that. And I know you can jump in, jump out, and not miss a beat, essentially.
I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
I hate that shit. That's coming from somebody who loves true crime stuff.
Those ones are kind of like my least favorite, too. I do like the one with LL Cool J on it, but not because it's a good show. I just like LL Cool J in that show.
That's fair.
Yeah, there's nothing. So, I mean, I'm not an NCIS fan either. I did follow all of the CSIs. I did the CSIs, and those were interesting for a while because you could very much follow them based upon the color scheme of the town they were in. So if you watched the regular CSI, they were in Vegas, so it was a little reddish orange all the time. And then they had Miami, and that was like bright yellowish in their filters on their camera. And then when you're in New York, everything was like blue and gray hues. And so I watched all of those. So Dan, what got you into true crime?
I've always been a fan of crime, true crime. Like, And I've kind of worked some of this into my stand up, but so I'm not trying to like do jokes at you, but I'm not trying to do that, but like it is real life. Like when I was a kid, I thought like I always romanticized like robbers and mobsters and things like that. And I thought you could grow up to be a criminal. Like that's a, you know, I was not very bright, but like
that was your
that
goal.
Was, like the idea, like, you could grow up and become a made man. You know what I mean? Like that whole concept. And so I've always been, you know, into like true crime because of that. Like I will admit I tried to be a criminal.
Oh,
what variety?
Got shoplifting when I was 11 ended my spree, you know?
That's fascinating. Okay. Then this gives me like, I want to broaden this geek thing. When you play role playing games, do you pick the thief or the rogue then? Do you want to be the villain?
All the time.
Fascinating. Absolutely
fascinating. Almost every role playing character I've ever played has a rogue-esque quality. It's usually 9 times out of 10 I play a rogue, and even the 1 time out of 10 that I don't, it's still got rogue-esque qualities.
Yeah, two of our friends are in the same camp as you. They are always rogues and villains, and why am I friends with you? Because you are just sketchy. Like you want you are intentionally sketchy. Like you woke up this morning and said, if I could select to be sketchy or not
chaotic.
Sketchy. But you're not even chaotic good. You're just chaotic. You're not even
exactly.
Like...
you just don't know what you're going to get with me. I might be good for a while, and then I might not.
We're going to introduce you to two of our friends and two of our favorite people on Be Our Geek. Our friend Peter, who is always a villain and would be the evil queen in every nightmare if he could. Also, our friend Jake Stubby J Beaver. He has read every book on being a villain. Like, if he could write another book, it would be on being a villain. You guys fascinate me as just a methodology, the people that enjoy being a rogue. Because remind me, Jayton, where do you live in that whole world? Like, are you kind of in between? I feel like that's what came out last time.
Yeah, I'm in between. I mean, for me, I see the allure of being chaotic, and being the disruptor, and being the individual or the character that incites other people to think about their normal lives. Because again, if you're a villain, you're coming at it from a very different perspective. You have your agenda on what you think the society should be doing. Power obviously has a lot to do with it. Ego obviously has a lot to do with it. But I can easily find myself in that middle ground of being attracted to the hero side on quote unquote being the savior, not necessarily of the world, but even of a community or even a specific, mindset of, I think innately I should be good, But there is certainly components of, but why am I good? Why am I following this that everybody else? So yeah, I fall in the middle somewhere.
And anyone who listens to our show knows that I am lawful good to a fault. Like I am the quintessential paladin. Like I've tried to do, like when we play video games where they let you, like I've been curious about, well, what happens if you do this, the storyline where they're bad and I can't follow through on it? Like I always halfway through detour back to ending up on the side.
Oh, that's funny.
I feel guilty if I'm playing. I do. I feel guilty if I'm playing. I'm trying to like Mass Effect or something and I start answering like a jerk just to see what happens. I'm like, I feel I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. I feel so bad with what I told this fictitious character in my video game and I course correct back. So yeah, I just can't. I am never a rogue. My ex-husband was always a rogue and I should have thought about that when we were dating. So this is clearly not going to work. We fundamentally have differences. So
I need to clarify though, for me, it isn't so much being evil that I'm attracted to. It's the gypsy nomadic quality. And that's even in my life. I kind of identify as that. Like mm-hmm. I move around a lot. I'm very free spirited and that's how I feel the rogue. You know, especially in role playing. Rogues are just free spirited. They just kind of do what they want and get through the day.
You could be a traveling paladin. We travel. Like, can you tell I'm all getting my feelings hurt? it always makes it sound like being the hero, like being the paladin, when we're just so
until
stiff.
The king tells you to guard the castle, and then you won't travel.
I would have guarded the castle anyway, probably. I would have said this castle needs guarding.
That's the point.
Clearly someone should be guarding this landscape. I will do it until someone else comes along. So I think, so that makes sense that you are watching True Crime because you go, what can I learn from this? As this is, you know, for the documentary that it is, I am watching it going, I am so glad they caught those people. And if not, what can I do? What can I do to assist them in catching that person? Have you ever just Googled or wikied, True Crime, Dan?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean,
I've got some stuff for you. So, okay, if you wiki it, here's what it starts with. True crime is a nonfiction, literary, podcast, and film genre in which the author examines an actual crime and details the actions of real people. Now, here's when they get mean. Okay, now it goes on to this. True crime works can impact the crimes they cover and the audience who consumes it. The genre is often criticized for being insensitive to the victims and their families and is described by some as trash culture. I was like, that got harsh fast. Like, trash culture, maybe. You know, I get that.
I feel like whoever wrote that, whoever filled in that wiki, probably was somebody that was affected by a true crime podcast.
Exactly. They're like, you were talking about my cousin, and now you're all miserable people. It's funny, though, because if you go into it, there's a lot of historical context, surprisingly, for true crime. It goes back to, you can look back into the 1500s when they were passing out pamphlets and chapter books and street literature that was about murders and other crimes that they would be out there.
Wow.
Yeah, and so you would find all these things, and then as printing methods became more widespread, that was like the inception of like these true crime novellas. And you can go and watch like they, what they say is Truman Capote's nonfiction novel In Cold Blood from 1965 is credited with establishing the modern novelistic style of the genre. And I think that's a fascinating thing too, because now you can watch it. There are hundreds of podcasts, all kinds of TV shows, multiple networks that focus on true crime, and some networks that are supposed to be focused on something else, and then for large expanses of the day, pivot into a variety of true crime programming. And so I was one of the ones that more than I would watch the fictionalized version of it, I would watch all of the Forensic Files and the Unsolved Mysteries and the one that you could get on Oxygen Network. There's one called Snapped, so it's always about women serial killers. Not all serial killers, just murderers in general. And this is another little interesting fun fact I thought you'd like. It says that approximately 40% of true crime content matter focuses on the tales of serial killers. 40% of them are serial killers.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, and this is kind of a funny thing with me is even though I do listen to I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, I prefer ones that are not about murder.
Right. Okay.
Like directly. Like I'm not I know all the serial killers and I'm studying them and this and that or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not really into that. Like one of my favorite podcasts is called the Heist Podcast, and they very, very rarely have any stories with murder. Sometimes the story they're covering has a murder, but that's not the focal point of the story. So they'll basically just be like, oh yeah, and this guy died, and then they move on because they're deliberately trying to stay away from that kind of stuff, you know. So,
and I would say heist movies are one of my favorite movies to watch, you know.
Mine too.
I mean, I love watching the drama behind are they going to get away with it? Are they playing the Robin Hood where they're stealing from the rich and ideally going to give it to the poor or whatever in their mind, whoever that is. But no, there's absolutely thrill in watching a heist, anything.
Oh, absolutely. To me, it's like watching a game of chess.
Right.
Yeah, you know, because you have the two parties, they're doing their, they're doing their moves and stuff to try to basically outwit and outsmart their opponent. And in the case of a heist, it's usually the police versus the heister. In some movies it has nothing to do with police. It's, you know, the opponent is the security system at a, you know, fancy museum or something. And how are they going to get away with it? And all these, you know, all these different elements to it.
Right. Well, I always think it's interesting when you sub-genre these overall categories like true crime, because I don't like the ones, like, I'm not such a fan of the violent and murdery ones that I watch I'm less inclined to watch a unsolved mysteries. I like the ones that have the resolution, you know, and I think that there's something about that, you know, if you look at the fictionalized versions of it, if we're going a CSI versus a Criminal Minds, I was less a fan of the Criminal Minds of the world because it was too, I didn't like the way that they kind of presented it. Like, maybe it's okay that the villain is out there and doing their thing. Like, it was too, like, it was too close to home. Like, that just creeped me out. When, if I'm watching a Forensic Files where it's about the science, I like the ones where it talks about constructing or deconstructing what the crime was, but then the science-ish stuff behind it where they solve it. So I like watching the mechanisms to how they figure out how these things happen. So kind of the opposite side of what you guys like from the heist perspective, I like them solving it and how that works. But that kind of makes sense because I am not a big heist movie fan, but I do like murder mysteries from the perspective of there's some sort of sleuth that then goes out and try and solves the crime. So I like a lot of those kind of shows.
I do prefer shows that have resolution too with that. Like, and when it comes to like non-fictional true crime types of shows, Law and Order is my jam.
Yes.
Like, I'm a hardcore Law and Order, specifically SVU is one of my favorites, and it's because, you know, it really puts it all in there. You know, they have the crime, then they solve the crime, they build their evidence, and then most episodes end with the trial,
right?
Or, you know, and then the resolution of them being convicted, or in very rare cases not being convicted,
right?
Or being acquitted. But shows like that, but I really do like real, you know, not just non-fictional stuff, but like watching Forensic Files, you know, the first 48.
Right.
You know, shows like that. Dateline. Dateline's another one, you know, that often watch.
Is there anything streaming, some of the new things on streaming platforms as opposed to the traditional channels that you are more attracted to that people could binge?
Well, they're actually, because I've always been a big Mob fan too, like that was another thing, that's another part of the true crime genre that I really follow and really fascinated by. There's actually a new one about the FBI taking down the five crime families in New York on Netflix. It's called Fear City, the New York versus the Mob, the Mafia. And it's a limited series. It's a three-part doc about how they kind of did it.
So
took down the major players.
When you were sitting in Sioux Falls, were you like, I wish we had a mobster here? Like, were you waiting to like...
Well, so funny.
Would you have
funny
like been like,
is,
an, like a, and, if we were going to like, I would apprentice myself to the Sioux Falls mafia.
Right? Exactly. Okay. Like, I honestly think like if I could have been a, if I was, could have picked any like decade or era to be part of, I would have wanted to be part of the 20s and 30s. Like, I wanted, like, that is, I totally would have been. That would have been my jam.
Wandering around with a Tommy gun, waiting to crack some bank with an old school safe.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Getting the old Model T and kind of speed away.
Okay. Speed-ish.
I could easily see you with a fedora walking down with a suit on and just kind of giving the eye and like
got the pinky ring, you know.
There we go. All right.
Oh, 9 yards.
Next time we cosplay, that's what I expect. So.
I grew up in a really small town, in about less than 20,000 people, but there was a bar that, it was like a neighborhood, like grocery store bar, like a whole that was in my neighborhood. And they actually had stories, and whether it's true or not, I feel like it's just like small town lore, but that particular building in that town that, Al Capone actually came and hid out there multiple times. And I do know from doing some research, because I've been looking at starting my own true crime inspired podcast. So I was looking at stuff from where the town that I lived in when I grew up, because about one in every 3 years has been a murder in this town that I grew up in. And for me, that was kind of fascinating because of the size of the town. Like, right. That number seemed kind of high to me. But anyway, like in the 30s, there was a sheriff that ended up becoming a notorious hitman for the mafia. So he like started, he was born in Kimball, South Dakota. He joined the army. He was a, you know, decorated soldier, came back, became the sheriff, then ended up, and this was during the Prohibition era, ended up stealing some money from the county, then went to jail. And then when he came out of jail, he just went straight up criminal. Eventually, wow, turned into a hitman. He was the one. He was responsible for the Kansas City massacre, like all this stuff, you know. Like, so while it sounds like it's like, oh, just small town, look at us. There's a little bit of me that's like, you know what? With these ties to Prohibition in the 30s and 40s. I could see where this might be a real thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would be fascinated, and I don't know if this already exists. So your true crime-inspired podcast, would it be something along that vein? Or let's look at smaller towns and go, here's where they had a tie as well.
Well, so the reason I say inspired, because it's not going to be fully true crime, but it is – I want to focus. I'm hoping to focus more on the Midwest, primarily probably South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota. The name of the podcast is Red Prairie Podcast. Mm-hmm. And instead of like doing your typical, here's the facts, you know, maybe with a co-host, whatever, your typical true crime podcast that there's thousands of already, I'm going to write narratives that are inspired by the crimes. Oh. And it's going to be more of a storytelling. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to write my own stories that are inspired by these events. So it's not all, you know, kind of my interpretation of what might have happened.
Sure.
You know, and this particular guy, his name is Vern Miller. I'm probably going to focus on him for the first couple of episodes.
Right.
Like, that's kind of the idea that I want to do. But I do want to focus on, because I feel like, and I know there's a podcast called Small Town Murder, where there's a podcast that does do some of it, but I don't know. I don't feel like we in the Midwest gets representative enough with true crime. I mean, a lot of crazy stuff does happen here, but
right,
you never really hear about it.
Right.
You know?
It's like, it's surprisingly, like, when you hear something that somebody gets disappeared here, you're like, oh. So, and I think it's fascinating because we do live in a part of the country that things can just disappear, and there's all these questions, and people just stop asking, it seems like, if it's in the Midwest. So, mm-hmm, you know, and that I think is an interesting phenomenon here. Not that I'm encouraging anyone out there to go out and crime. In fact, the opposite. I prefer you don't crime.
Yeah,
don't crime.
Don't.
So I'm not saying
if you do, don't get caught.
Right.
So.
Don't crime. I'd rather not talk about you and in your criminess. There's usually quite often where I'm like, it seemed like it would have been easier to not crime, but you elected to crime. So, you know, let's prefer that we don't crime. So I am I just want to hear about your fictionalized version of all of these crimes, Dan. I think that'll be fabulous.
Yeah. Well, and that's the idea. So
yeah.
It's funny though, because, you know, we're talking about not doing crimes or whatever, and I always joke, you know, I got caught shoplifting when I was 11, trying to steal, you know, Justice League action figures. And I was, it's funny, I was like, yeah, I learned a very valuable lesson that day. Don't get caught.
Wise
words. That was
words.
My takeaway.
Yeah.
Record something.
Right. Wise words from Dan Bublitz Jr. We want to encourage everybody to go to your YouTube channel because they can see your new special, 25 Live. So that was just posted in May, right? That just got posted.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that wasn't nearly filmed as fancy as the one man show. That was just a recording that I took from a really good show and just put it out there.
Right.
Just to have some content out there.
That is fantastic that people go and find that. They can also find your podcast, Art of Bombing, the Art of Bombing podcast. And that's a weekly podcast now, right? Because you've gotten busy again, congratulations.
Yep.
Congratulations. Because a lot of us were all pumping out so much more content because we were like, we're at home. So it's nice that people are like, you know what? I'm going back to a regular schedule because things are becoming busy-ish. So congratulations on that.
Slow down.
So let's tell everybody about that, and we'll make sure we link to all of that on our pages as well. So Art of Bombing, tell us about that a little bit, Dan.
Okay, so the Art of Bombing, can't even talk. The Art of Bombing, see, I just bombed saying the title. Can't even say the promote my own podcast. It is a comedy podcast, mostly. I've had other guests on there, but I typically talk to performing artists about bombing on stage. Mm-hmm. And basically the concept is finding success through failure.
Right.
There are not a lot of podcasts that focus on the kind of the dark part of comedy, which bombing and doing poorly is, but I wanted to bring a different perspective because I feel like you can learn from failure, you know?
Right.
And so I talk to comedians and performers about their bad sets, and then we talk about what they took from them, you know, what they try to do to get better and become better performers.
Right. Well, I think it was fantastic. And again, I was very excited to be on it. And so I'm sorry, Jayton, did I get in your way? Did you have something to say?
No, I think everybody in their professional life can learn from that. Because everybody bombs a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Whether you realize it or not, you can learn from, again, professional comedians are used to it. I mean, this is literally, I'm an actor as well. I'm used to the word no. And at a certain point, you don't take it personally. You're like, I just wasn't right for the role. But at a certain point, you learn from everything you're doing and you build upon it. So it's not, again, I think a lot of other professions could also learn from the show and the fact that you have to move beyond it. And what did you learn? And how did you do better the next time you were up there?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, I've had musicians, I've had burlesque dancers, I've had convention directors on there. You know, I've had entrepreneurs, business people. So, you know, while it's comedy strong with usually comedians, there are a whole bunch of different types of guests
That's
on
great.
The show too. So
it's awesome.
Well, I'm excited to continue listening to your podcast, Art of Bombing, and encourage people to go on your YouTube page, 25 Live. Jayton, before we wrap up, do you want to tell them a little bit of some of the stuff that's going on with the Twin Cities Film Fest as we move forward, hitting September and October in stride?
Yeah. So we're in the final phases of curating all of our films this year. And for COVID reasons, we are going to have majority of our festival be online on our streaming platform with the recorded Q&As and Zoom calls and all that fun stuff, some live stuff too. And then we're truly working with the theaters to do something, not necessarily a full-on festival. We're not South Dakota by any means, but something to still have that in-person gathering appeal to the experience. So again, a couple of screenings here and there, social distancing, masks required in a big theater where we can have, you know, a solid 100 people and they can easily just sit away from each other, but also enjoy the experience. So a lot of things are going to happen over the next couple of weeks. We launched our Empower series. We have our Changemaker series. And again, we're going to try. My job is to, by any means necessary, I want to make this festival be the most affordable festival anybody has ever seen. So I truly want to make the festival free for everybody. So I'm doing my darndest to work with partners and donors and sponsors to be able to cover those ticket costs and literally make everything free so that we are all enjoying arts and visual storytelling in these times in the comfort of our own homes without the scare of going out there. So, but I still want to be, again, I still want to encourage people to consume art in any capacity that they can. So what can we do to make it happen? So again, nothing set yet, but that's my goal this year.
Well, I'm excited, and I always appreciate you allowing me to be part of what goes on at the Twin Cities Film Fest. We encourage everybody to find out more by going to our website. It's TwinCitiesFilmFest.org. You can follow our show. Look for Be Our Geek Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at BeOurGeekShow@gmail.com. We encourage you to like, subscribe, and listen to us everywhere you like your favorite podcast. And you can be part of the show if you want to leave us a message. That number is 612-276-2774. So we encourage you to continue to be part of our Geek Show community. And Dan, we appreciate you joining us. We'd love to have you come back on early and often.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Definitely. So everybody go out there, look for Dan Bublitz Jr. Make sure you follow everything on the Twin Cities Film Fest. And we appreciate you being part of the show. Remember, everyone is a geek about something.